Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up for the sex. It's the Apropos of Nothing podcast.
With your hosts,
Salsa.
Matt.
The fuck was that?
That was my sexy voice.
It was really, don't ever do that again.
Yeah.
This is my sexy voice.
And Jenna.
Because this is a sexy day.
No, we have a full boat again this week. We were down one member. To be fair, I do enjoy the A1 Originals episodes merely because they infuriate Jenna.
And then while you were wearing your
I did
your
wear the polo
A1,
shirt, yeah. By the way.
Of course you did. Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, I'm really glad I wasn't here for that.
I pulled the polo out of my closet and then just went, no, that's too much.
And that right there is the measure of the difference between Salsa and I. Salsa thought better of wearing a polo shirt, whereas I succumbed. But anyway.
I just had that. I'm wearing the shirt of the band I've been.
So anyway, we're back.
Yay!
Jenna was busy last week because she was doing real-life theater shit.
Yeah.
I.e. Fearless Five.
Fearless Five.
Before we start on that real quick.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about what we're drinking.
Okay.
Because so, I want to get into that.
I'm going to tell a story. So, you know, get
story
comfy.
Time. Thereby hangs a tale.
So this particular bottle of booze is something that I purchased with Kirky, Kirsten White.
Friend of the show.
Last festival, I think?
Oh, a while.
Yeah, so I hope it's still good. Might be the festival before. I don't remember. We'll find out.
Oh, well, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
Might be too old if it was this last summer. Might be two summers ago.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I mean, it's booze, so.
Right. The science, bitch.
Fucking science.
But here's
if I know spices in the ass a lot.
If I know anything, it only gets better as it gets older.
So, Kirky recommended this to me. It's Choya Umishu, which I believe is a form of sake that has fruit in it.
There's something ume in the bottom
fruit.
Of that.
Yeah, it's ume fruit.
What's ume?
It's a Japanese fruit.
It looks like olives.
Thank you for answering.
No, it really looks like huge olives. Plum?
Yeah, I thought they were olives in there.
Yeah.
But they're apparently slightly bigger than a walnut,
so that's like too big for an olive.
Green?
I mean, the bottle's green.
Oh, okay.
Who can say?
I think they're a form of plum.
Who can say
or
my
something
Godzilla
similar?
Nemesis.
God, you guys never talk to me. Okay. Anyway, so this was recommended to by Kirky either last summer or summer before, and so I picked it up at the booze shop. Jesse and I were going to drink it. You know, like right before we moved out of the house when we separated into separate houses. Okay. So we didn't do that. Things got crazy. So then we were like, okay, well, we'll have this as like our celebratory booze when we move back into the same place.
Ah.
So Jesse broke up with me yesterday. So fuck it. Guess what we're drinking?
That thing. Yay. Jenna's misfortune equals my drunkenness.
Right? I say Jesse broke up with me. It was his lead, but I went with it, kind of. There was a counseling thing. Anyway.
Dude, things are complicated.
Yeah,
things are complicated.
Yeah. I'm not like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. But I'm still hurting crabby about it.
That's fair.
So we're gonna find out what the fuck this is. Number one.
Is this a sipping drink? Or is this like a drinking drink?
I believe
drink?
It's a sake. So
kind of a sipper.
So it's kind of a, you know, I mean, you could chug it depending on how you do it. All right. Yay. Happy Valentine's Day, bitches.
Kill Eddie.
Ooh, pleasant smell.
Oh, I like that a lot.
My heavens.
That is fucking awesome.
Good job, Kirky.
Well played.
Yeah.
Well played, Kirky.
Mm.
Is it a green apple or a plum or something?
It's probably plum. I think ume is a plum.
But there is kind of a tart. Green apple tartness to it, but that is a very plum.
This is really goddamn good.
Yes.
That is a dangerous booze.
Yeah, this would be the kind of thing where the bottle would last about 8 minutes.
And then you're just like, everything's fine. Why is the room gone?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. This is really good.
Oh.
Nice. Okay, so well played, Kirky. Thank you.
Now you know. Also, P.S., I'm single, ladies.
Get it all up in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we briefly touched on it. The reason you weren't here last week was the Fearless Five was in its final week of rehearsals.
Final?
We are now the week after. So opening night has happened. I was there.
Okay.
Of a caramel color.
I was about to ask you what color is that and then decided against
it. Which is why I said that color.
That color. Okay.
So, we've had the opening night of Fearless Five, Harbingers.
Yeah.
I was there. I saw it.
Yeah.
You were a director for one segment or two?
One.
One.
The final segment.
The final segment.
They look like caramel colored dates.
They do.
Yeah.
They look delicious.
You are distracted tonight, Salsa.
Well, they do look really good. I'm kind of eyeballing his screen.
Yeah.
I'm trying to fill in the listeners, ladies, with information on Umi.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So, first show, how'd you feel?
Oh, my God. I am so ridiculously proud of my cast. I can't even.
It was a really fun
show. I loved all of the shows. They were all very different in their own ways.
Wildly different.
Wildly different. Which is neat. And all still funny. And I think, you know, when you have a mix, not quite everything's quite for everybody kind of a thing. Like, well,
it's the horror anthology thing. It was like, if there's five things, one or two will be your favorites.
Yep.
And then someone else's favorites will be different too than yours.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how that goes.
Like, there are things that I disliked about one of the shows that somebody else thought was brilliant. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Yep.
And that is purely an opinion thing. But mine was obviously the best. So,
It was really fun. I went and saw that with Megan. We brought the boy because it was my weekend to have him. So, the hardest part of the whole thing was reminding him that we weren't working at the theater. So, therefore, he couldn't just go wherever he wanted.
Right.
Because, like, he'd been there for Inferno for, 2 months. And just had free reign of that theater.
Right.
He can go in the basement, and he can go upstairs, and he can go in the dressing room, and he can jump around on stage. I was like, nobody, we're here as audience tonight. Therefore, all we have access to is bathrooms, you know, concession stand, and our seats. Whereas if we're here working, most of the theater is open to us. But, like, those are two different things, and they look the same to him because he's 10.
Right.
And it's like, but that's an important lesson to learn. And so we had a little trouble with that. It was just like, it's intermission. He's just like ready to hop on stage and go bounce on the couch. I'm like, nope,
no.
That's not what you do. And he's like, ah. I'm like, want popcorn? You know. So that worked. But, yeah, it was really fun. Like, we got to see, and I'm not going to remember everybody because there's too many. But, like, you know, young Eric wrote a thing. Chip wrote a thing that I was very, very pleased to
really
see.
Really good.
To my knowledge, that's the first comedy Chip has written. And
it was done.
It was very clever. I liked it.
His was Neptune?
Neptune, yep.
Yeah. Lauren directed that, and I think she did a brilliant job.
I believe that was Lauren's
that.
First directing gig.
Is it?
At least
she
first
really
Fearless,
seemed
for
know,
sure.
She really seemed
might,
to know what
she
the fuck she was
doing. She might have done some other
doing,
thing, maybe like in college or whatever, but
yeah,
certainly her first Fearless directing gig. But, like, yeah, Lauren had a directing gig. You know, Tim wrote the piece you directed, right?
Yep.
And then you had, like, Dawn directed a piece. I believe John Euchre wrote a piece.
Yep.
I'm going to forget some of these.
Okay, so Dawn directed one by John Zeller.
Oh, yes. Yep.
And then Kyle directed the one by John Euchre.
Yes, okay.
And that's one of the really interesting things, is looking at the shows. I don't think I would have directed John Euchre's piece the same way Kyle did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kyle's way was far superior.
That's a really fun part of it.
I think it really matched what it was that John was going for, and I don't think I would have read that.
And Zach, whose last name I can never remember, who from Fantastic Voyage.
What is his last name? Oh, God, I feel
Fearless.
Awful now.
Yeah, no, amazing
Suzanne's
dude.
Beautiful husband. I got.
But that was, I believe, at least his Fearless directorial debut.
Yeah.
And did the piece by Young Eric. And I'd read Young Eric's piece, because he sent it to me to kind of go over and give notes. And so I'd read it, and I was like, in my head, I pictured it a certain way. And parts of it were done the way I would have pictured it, and then other parts were done very differently.
Yeah.
And parts of it were done the way I think, because it's done in a certain spirit.
Sure.
And it pays homage to that, but it does it in a way I would not have thought to go. And it's like, oh, God, it's really interesting to watch what is writer, what is director, what is cast.
Yep.
And, you know, so I sat there in, like, an intermission, Megan and I going, okay, how much of this do you think was someone ad-libbed this idea or line or movement, and they're like, go with it, make it bigger.
Yeah.
And it became a running gag for the set. Or how much of this is, you know, for any of these bits, you know, any of the five one acts. Like, and that's the fun part. It's like to go, okay, like, retroactively, where do you think this came from?
It's really
fun with that many, and that's the other thing too, is there's, you know, 10 cooks realistically in this, and that makes for all these things being like, oh my God, there's so many styles and choices that it's fascinating.
Yeah, what really got me, like, Tim's script, I don't think any of the lines in that were ad-libbed.
I can
and
see that.
Yet, so many of them, like, sound like they're just off the cuff, and that's really speaks to Tim's writing style.
It speaks to Tim's writing style, and, like, also Duck's theory of if you cast properly,
Oh yeah. And it'll oh my fine. God, my cast.
you have a really fun I one. To be fair, the cast for every bit oh, is yeah. really, really fun. But yeah, like yeah, yours and Chip's and Eric's and well, honestly,
yeah,
all of them. They always have someone amazing.
Yeah.
That is kind of like the anchor.
Right.
And then someone who surprises you because you haven't seen them before.
Right.
And like yeah, but it's yeah, like it's just like, okay, like could you put someone better in this role? Probably not.
Right.
You know, like,
at least, so at least really, and really specifically fun. For what it was that was done with that piece.
Yeah.
Like,
they were all tuned very well.
You know, there's, I did an exercise with somebody else where we were talking about how would you have cast this one? How would you have directed it? And the people that you cast have to fit the directing style. Like, there's no way around that.
Right.
And yeah, my cast, holy shit, did I luck out with people that. A could work with me and basically read my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, I'm kind of thinking this, and they'd do a thing and be like, yep, that's it. Yeah, all right, let's
yeah.
go.
And got it in one. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was a fucking hoot. Like, I had a really, really great time watching that show.
The other thing, as a director, when you are directing things and you come up with an idea that you think would be funny, but you're not sure everybody else is going to find funny, to have that audience that first night react so strongly to one of the silly little bits that I, you know, directing bit, and you know which one I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just like, I know this pleases me. I know this makes me giggle. I hope the rest of the audience finds it as funny as I do.
Yeah.
And they did.
And that's part of the fun of going an opening night.
Right?
Is that everybody is a little bit on tenterhooks waiting to see if the laughs occur when they're supposed to. And you're also, as a cast, learning where the laughs, you don't even realize, are the laughs occur.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is the same thing we learned from doing Jenny Bandage or Inferno or, you know, Mystery Mystery Lodge. There are things that you don't even realize are jokes until you say them in front of an audience and they lose their shit. And you're like,
oh,
I guess that is ridiculous, but it's become so normalized to me
yeah.
because of a billion rehearsals that it's not funny. You
one
know?
Of the things,
no, like, eh?
One of the things obvious. That I try to do as a director is I laugh.
Yes.
I try to, at least once a rehearsal, be the audience for my cast so that they get a feeling of what it is that might come up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I mean, I always laughed at that part, but man, not the way that audience laughed at that
It was
part.
A really, that was a hot
it
crowd.
Was,
it was really
It
fun.
Was a hot crowd. And that,
really nice.
I mean, that felt like a good 30 to 45 seconds. I mean, it felt like longer than that, but I'm, you know,
it was
estimating. It was,
yeah.
Yeah.
So the Fearless Five Harbingers show has 2 weekends.
Yep.
Still.
Yep. 2 weekends. Friday, Saturday.
Yep. Yeah. Which again, hit up Facebook. You can find the event for it. It is at the Historic Mounds Theater.
Yes.
Which you've heard us mention before. You can get your tickets online at a time at a discount, or you can get a discount if you have a convergence badge.
Fringe button, I think.
Think of fringe button, whatever. Yeah. The point is, book your tickets at least the day before.
Yeah.
And they're like 12 instead of 15. So you might as well do that.
Right.
That'll be good fun. Salsa.
Yes.
You're fairly vibrating with excitement because I know what you did.
Oh,
last
that's why I've kept talking the entire time.
No.
Wait, fist bump.
That's not why I'm vibrating.
Oh.
This is happening right now as we speak.
In real time?
In real
what?
Time.
I don't like anything real.
Shit.
This is a podcast.
I just got an email.
I'm so proud of you.
Good job, Hollywood.
it looks like next Tuesday, the 21st.
Uh-huh.
I will be appearing on the WCCO mid-morning show.
What?
Are we talking radio?
The
TV.
Radio would be funnier.
And now he's going to swallow a sword.
No, Matt, that's exactly what it sounds like.
For all that the average, you know, commuter knows? Yes.
Sorry, I just came down to apparently steal the booze and...
it's really good booze.
It is really good booze.
You have a story behind it. You'll be
really
depressed later, I promise.
I'll listen maybe sometime.
No, give me Ricky credit.
No, I'm here to affirm... apparently I'm here to affirm Matt and steal the delicious booze.
Yay!
Raiden wins at podcast. Okay, so
anyway, you're going to be on TV.
Apparently, yeah.
Yay!
Are you going to make all the money?
Yes.
Attaboy.
Yes, yes, I am.
Second question.
I'm gonna make all of the money that you get for appearing on Norning Show.
Follow up question. Who books that?
Smooth. So what happened? How did this fall into your lap?
So World Sword Swallowing Day is coming up. I may have mentioned that. And the point of World Sword Swallowing Day,
You can punch himself, so don't stop yourself.
It is World Sword Swallowers Day. Not so swallow. It's not the art. It is the day recognizing the people who do the art. So it's World Sword Swallowers Day. But the whole point behind World Sword Swallowers Day is to bring awareness of the art and educate people on the art. So part of the event and everything leading up to it is doing, you know, appearances in news and stuff like that, telling people about it and stuff like that. So I had sent messages to all of the local radio and newspapers and stuff like that.
That is goddamn proactive.
Saying, I know, right? Hey, here's a news tip and stuff like that. And one of them.
You got a guy?
Talk me.
No, he learned from the best, Jenna.
Yes!
This actually.
Major domo. This is what I need.
Dear listeners,
if you want to be a major domo and work for free.
So my job.
That's what I'm here for.
Is news websites. That is literally my job, is news TV stations websites. So you would think if anybody would know how to email or submit a news tip to a website for news, it would be somebody whose job it is to know those websites in and out. And apparently not.
I did that 10 years earlier
and 10 times better.
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
I would assume that of anyone but you.
Oh, yeah. But no.
You would do exactly what I would do with it, which is go, wait, what?
I had sent in news tips to a bunch of places, and WCCO just got back to me.
Nice.
And said I would be doing their Tuesday 21st 9 a.m. morning show.
Cool.
So I'll have to get work off from that.
Get some work done.
Which is a really nice counterpoint to what happened to me earlier today. This was last Friday.
Yeah. I heard the story. I'm going back upstairs now.
This is the opposite of crime. This isn't quite as good as the wrong bathroom story.
There
was a changing locker room. On Friday, my car was starting to, you know, make those funny noises, and so I brought it in, and I was just like, oh, I'm a little low on oil. So I got some oil and I put it in the car and drove away. And I've been, you know, it's been, what, 4 or 5 days now? Today my car started making weird noises again.
Oh.
I was like, huh, that's... So I stopped at a gas station and I popped open the hood. And that's when I realized that 4 or 5 days ago, when I had put oil in my car, I had neglected to put the cap back on the oil.
Oh, son of a bitch.
It's not like it was just still sitting there or something like that. I had flipped it over and placed it right on top of the engine, and it's gone. It's fucking gone. So, yeah, I felt like a real intelligent person.
Did you get water in there?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Okay, so Salsa, do you feel stupid?
Yes. Extremely.
Next follow-up question. Do you feel stupid enough? Because Jen and I are willing to help you.
Oh, yeah, I'm in. I will assist. Matt can drive. I'll get the assist.
Yeah, that's how bad it is. Jen would rather have me drive than you now. That's how terrible. Seriously.
So yeah, I need to stop at the auto store tomorrow.
No, you are now working on surplus oil. You're so bad at keeping your own.
Yeah.
Oh. No, that's terrible.
So yeah, I felt real intelligent. That is not the.
I sure wasn't artificially intelligent because you were actually bad at what you were doing.
You know, I'm terrible at what
I
do. But I get are we moving on to?
No, I was just going to keep making fun of your oil.
Are we good?
I was going to play that out as long.
You know,
do we want to do this or do we want to do that later?
No, let's do that. Let's do it.
Okay.
God damn it. Fuck it.
All right. No.
Do your thing.
So Mondo.
Do your little.
Mondo was this weekend.
Going with your silly little show.
Yes. Right. So Mondo was wonderful as always. I love Mondo. It is seriously my happy place. No matter how rough life can be or whatever, it's Mondo is. I'm at Mondo.
Yeah, I am racking up stronger and stronger punch to the balls from Aaron Casper for having never been there. Because I got that message.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
But I brought Asher on Saturday for a little while and Lilbeth on Sunday. Because it's tradition at this point for me to bring them for a little while at least. I saw a lot of really inspiring stuff. And every year I... Every year, the amount of actual juggling that I do while I'm there decreases, and I spend a lot more time absorbing. Like, instead of just sitting there and juggling and working on stuff myself, I spend a lot of time sitting and watching what other people are doing.
Well, I think last year we talked about learning patter and crowd gathering skills. Was kind of like your focus last year. Like, not intentionally necessarily,
right.
But that was part of what you started picking up, and that's, yeah, it's separate from juggling.
But just seeing what other people are doing and the different way they approach different things and stuff like that, as opposed to being so focused on what I'm doing and trying to get better at what I'm doing, which I can do at home. I've at this point, I'm almost like actually picking something up and throwing it in the air is a waste of my time at Mondo, because I can do that at home, but what I can't do is observe other people for hours on end doing really amazing things.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, something that has to be learned over hours of practice.
Right.
You're not going to learn in 3 hours over a weekend.
Exactly.
So get the things you can only get that weekend.
And that's not to say that I don't throw things up in the air and have fun with people, and I absolutely do that. Right. I played volley club for a good 2 hours Saturday night after
one day
the show,
I would like to be a good enough juggler to be able to play volley club. That'd be fun.
It made
you didn't
so
have
happy.
To be out at Fest when
no.
I was there.
Sure, but then we're talking Fest. That's a different animal entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I did. I spent a lot of time seeing people, the patterns, the style that they had, new props, and how they were being manipulated, and stuff like that. It was just like I've kind of taken a bit more of a observational role at Mondo. A few workshops. Took a workshop by guess who was in town?
Who?
Jay Gilligan.
Oh, no shit.
Yep, Jay Gilligan was in town and performed at the Spectacular. For those of you who are not juggling nerds, Jay Gilligan is one of the top 10 jugglers in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's not hyperbole. That is, if you rank the top 10 in the world, he's one of them. There's Jason Garfield, and there's the Galchenkos, and there's Jay Gilligan. But he... He used to coach the Cirque du Soleil jugglers. He teaches juggling at an institute in Sweden now. Like, that's his full-time job. He is the head teacher of a 3-year juggling program at this school.
And you thought your parents were pissed about your acting.
Yeah, I know, right?
you can major in juggling in cool countries.
Yeah, I mean, so dude knows his stuff, and they were talking about, where inspiration comes from, and you know, building a routine and making it a routine instead of just a series of tricks, you know, and talking about, you know, you have to have an opinion about things. You can't just go out and say, I'm going to do a lot of clubs and a lot of really fancy tricks. It's like, to build a good routine... What are you saying? What's your statement? What's your stance? What's your opinion on it? Yeah, is there a storyline, or are you making a statement about something, or is it a big fuck you to other people who have done this routine before? You know, what is your stance on whatever it is, and have an opinion, and you know, things like that, and then to be able to see him put that some of that stuff in practice in the show later was really 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 cool. And speaking of the show, the Mondo Spectacular happens every year at Mondo on Saturday night, and it is basically a who's who of jugglers doing what they do best. Mm-hmm. Not just jugglers, but kind of a lot of the performance artists, because if it was all jugglers, then it'd get boring. It would get to be too much. So we had some contortionists.
Oh.
there. There's a school in the Twin Cities here, Xelias. X-E-L-I-A-S.
They are in the Waterbury building.
Yep.
Yep.
And they came and performed, and they were... ow. Jay Gilligan, like I said, came and did his thing, and Tui...
Oh, Tui, yeah.
Tui actually pulled out some old school stuff.
Nice.
Tui did Shaker Cups, which he hasn't done in like 20 years.
We should point out, by the way, Tui performed at the Renaissance Festival, the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, since fucking forever.
Yeah.
Right.
And just one of those people who is casually better at everything than you'll ever be.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's basically where Tui fits, just for background. Yep.
But yeah, this was a routine he hasn't done in like 20 years. And,
that's awesome.
And, you know, he just... apparently they,
which is like a third of his career ago.
Right?
So,
yeah,
you know, yeah.
But but it was really cool to see kind of the old school style come out. You know, I haven't seen Shaker Cups in such a long time.
Nice.
Twin Cities Unicycle Club did their thing, and guess who performed?
Who?
Juggler. Benjamin Damask.
Yay! Former guest of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. He came and he did some clowning.
Yeah,
and,
Benjamin's amazing.
And it was good.
If you don't follow him on Facebook or whatever else you might be on right now, you should, because that dude posts little videos of him trying crazy shit, and it's a fucking joy to watch. Like, that dude is always learning, always trying,
Striving. He did this great clowning bit where he got an audience member out on the stage, and he basically played Pop Goes the Weasel on a little tin flute, and got the audience member to you know, at the right at the right time, in you know, the most amazing funny way.
That's delightful.
And it was just so good. But do you remember me talking a few years ago? And if you don't remember, it's your fault, because I've talked about this so many times. There's a girl named Andrea Noel. And she,
the Bolivian girl?
Yes.
Yes.
Hmm.
And she, you know, she's traveled the world, studied all over, clown school, juggling, all this other stuff. She's been performing since she was fucking knee high.
Old school vaudeville shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But she, to bring people up to speed, she does this routine. She has been reprising this character where she dresses up in all black, like, so she's lost in the background. She doesn't exist. And she makes a balloon animal man. He's about waist high, and his name is Elvis. And she straps his feet to her feet so he can walk and move around, and she controls his arms and the rest of his body with her hands. And every year... You know, she takes that character, and the character gets into new and different situations and stuff like that. But, you know, she brought Elvis back this year and did this just beautiful, like, you know, almost bring you to tears, beautiful little thing where Elvis finds a balloon, you know, an actual round balloon, and then he loses it, and it's floating up in the air, and he, like, climbs... You know, climbs and climbs in order to finally reach this balloon, and then he floats away, and it's very pretty. But there was somebody in the audience.
I would hope there's more than one.
Hold on. And I realized something. That if I truly wanted to appreciate what Andrea was doing on stage, I wasn't watching Andrea. I was watching Neil Skoy watch Andrea.
Oh, that's amazing. I love those moments.
Yeah.
Because I was...
I'm grinning. Like,
oh, no, yeah.
The best
because,
moments.
Yes, I was absolutely watching her with one eye, but my other eye was watching, because he was two rows over and a couple
so
seats
good.
Down.
I'm jealous
And
now.
Watching Neil Skoy watch her...
Just being
her,
raptured. Yeah.
He was losing his shit.
Oh, I love that.
He was absolutely... He was, like, chewing on his collar... And, like, his face had that mixture of wonder and childlike glee and emotion, but at the same time, that, like, insider knowledge and trained eye
and
respect for what's going on.
Yeah.
And all of it was painted on his face.
Oh, that's so good.
And it just brought what was already a really incredible performance, and it just brought it up to 11.
Oh,
it really, really did. And it was... I was so emotional after it, because I was just, like... The respect and the appreciation for what she was doing coming from him was just this really, really like special thing.
Very cool.
And it was that for me was probably the high point of the whole fucking thing.
Cool.
It was really cool to see that. And then there was a unicyclist from Germany, Nina Herzog, who just fucking brought the house down.
Nice.
Like, absolutely destroyed. And we've talked in the past about Twin Cities Unicycle Club being literally the best club in the world. Like, it has more awards and more champions and everything like that than any other unicycle club anywhere. But one of the things that Twin Cities Unicycle Club does is they have extremely technically difficult tricks. And then the rest of the choreography is kind of the afterthought. It's like getting from trick to trick. But they really showcase those tricks.
So the Jason Garfield of juggling.
Yeah, it's I just need to get from trick to trick to trick with a little bit of flash, you know, so it's not just trick, trick, trick. Whereas hers was still technically very, very difficult, but it was a lot more about the performance.
Flow.
And it was flowing from one, and it told a story, and it... It had that emotional ride that you went with and flowing from trick to trick, and it was flawless and just absolutely brought the house down. It was such a good performance. I don't know what else I could say about that. If you missed it, you missed some crazy, crazy stuff. I think Jay Gilligan now holds the record for how many volunteers he's had on one stage at 17. He got 17 volunteers on stage, and then built them into this like weird tableau where they were all holding like a prop, and there were some sitting over here on the stage holding clubs, and there were some kneeling over here with rings, and there were some like standing in the back with a couple of rings, and a couple standing in the back here with a couple clubs, and then one standing back here with a ball, and just kind of in all of these different poses all over the stage. And I actually talked to Aaron Casper about it later, because Aaron's like, I've known Jay since he was a sophomore. Like, I know Jay.
She's known everybody since the earth cooled.
Exactly. And she's like, I know Jay. And I was watching him going, he's making this shit up as he goes. He's serious. He's making this up on the spot, like that little son of a bitch. And she actually got on the radio and was like, Jerry, did you know about this? And Jerry goes, kind of. What do you mean kind of? He said it was going to be something unusual at the end.
That's awesome.
Like, that's all they knew.
I love it.
That's so but then he got them all arranged in this weird, you know, arrangement, and then he like changed the music, and then he did this, he ran through them in this zigzagging pattern, grabbing props as he passed them and juggling them in different ways. Like, he grabbed the clubs first, and then while he was juggling the clubs, he would toss one up in the air, grab a ring, and put it over his neck, and he would go down the row that way, and then he added a couple more clubs until he was juggling five, and then he got rid of those, and he grabbed the balls, and he was juggling the balls, and then he, like, hucked the balls up in the air, and he ran forward and stuck his arms through this whole row of rings. So now he's got rings around both arms, so his elbows are together, and then he catches the balls that he just hucked up in the air, and he's juggling them, and just this whole weird, like, what the fuck is going on? But it took him like 7 or 8 minutes just to put the tableau together, and the whole time the audience is sitting there going, what the fuck is
that's
going
so cool
on?
Oh my god.
So yeah, if you missed it, Mondo, you are an idiot, and you should probably go to that next year.
Nice.
That's
well. All right then.
All right, so, got that off my chest.
The thing I did this week, outside the usual, was I was a guest on the relatively new Not So Silent Planet podcast.
Oh,
our friend of the show and often collaborator for all of us, Philip Andrew Benenlo, has a open mic that he does once a month in Minneapolis here, which, as far as we know, is the only open mic dedicated to speculative fiction, sci-fi, and horror. And he's like, you know what we should do, because that's what the kids do these days, is leverage that shit into a podcast. And so he's done that. And so I was one of the people he tapped to record an episode recently. It's really fun. Given that task of being on the show, you are told to suggest a story that someone has, you know, that he will read and we will discuss in the show. Bring your own original work. And then at the end, you do a little thing where you discuss laws of semiotics, which are rules you think writers should obey.
Okay.
To not make their stuff suck. Okay. So, like, the examples he gives are like, thou shalt not write sci-fi where you visit a planet with one homogenous culture that covers the entire planet.
Or one ecosystem.
Exactly. And so, you know, like, and it's like, oh, okay, all right, that's kind of fun. But the trick is, you know, you write a bunch of those and you send them to him, and he's just got a bunch in a hat, like double line style, and everybody pulls one out of the hat. So you will not do your own. You will do one someone else has written.
Right.
And then you discuss whether or not they're valid or important, which is super fun. So I got paired up with her stage name is Fox Smolder. Fox Barrett, I believe, is the name she goes by. We record together. So the one episode was I was kind of the primary guest, and she was there for commentary. And the other one, she's the primary guest, and I'm there for commentary, along with Philip and Ben Sandell as the co-host.
Oh.
Yeah, so fucking a delightful group of people to work
with. Oh, yeah.
So I spent like 3 hours on Saturday recording this, and it was a fucking hoot. So my episode won't go up until sometime in March. I'll remind folks when that does come up. But I, of course, then had to go, oh, shit, I've got to come up with some kind of sci-fi, speculative fiction, horror thing for Philip to read that we can discuss. Two, I have to write a thing. Both of those are things I hate doing. So how do I get around that? So question one is answered by saying, well, for my fiction selection, I choose the game Thomas Was Alone. Because, you know what? When in doubt, make the host of the literary podcast play a Vigi game. Which he did, and right. He played through it twice.
Nice!
Oh!
Yeah. And we talk about it, because the whole point of that is, like, emergent sentience of AI.
Yeah.
It's a really good concept for that type of thing, it's just the dickish way to do it.
Yeah.
Which, at this point, I feel like most of what Philip and I do is fuck with each other. And so that made me very happy. So, like, that was really fun. And Fox and Ben kind of rolled with us. And then for the piece, which is going to be adapted into, I think, what I will probably do for Not-So-Silent Planet, which we'll be performing at Die Laughing April 1st weekend. I will be adapting this as I flesh it out a little more. I did kind of the dry run on Philip's podcast. I wanted to do something kind of genre, and given the choice of speculative fiction, sci-fi, horror, I'm going to kind of lean towards horror, and that's sort of my wheelhouse. And one of my favorite old-school horror things that doesn't get enough love, I believe, is the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Mm. You know, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dracula, they get all their love.
Yeah.
Gilman doesn't get a lot of love. Yeah. So I was like, I want to do something from him, from his perspective, and I was kind of kicking around some ideas, and they weren't really working, and I was like, I know how to do this.
Hmm.
The cop out. Tweets from the Black Lagoon.
Oh my god.
So I have.
At first I was like, of course you're going to use the cop out. Why did you have to think about that?
And so I have. What I've written is.
So the tweeter from the Black Lagoon?
Oh my god. I might
change it to that for Die Laughing just to make Jenna throw up.
Oh, I hate you.
But yeah, so what I ended up writing was a version of just the creature's day-to-day life, as told by tweets, like the most mundane, boring shit, and then it gets into the plot of the movie and follows the plot of the movie from the creature's perspective as a bit of a, the fuck is going on here? And had a pretty good time, because you get to make up all kinds of hashtags. And so I enjoyed it. And I'm going to tweak it and kind of rewrite and do some stuff. So
are you taking him more as an innocent bystander
kind
direction?
Of. Yeah, okay. Kind of a oops.
Yeah.
Like, all right, like the whole
kind of Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a misunderstanding at the beginning and then never quite getting things back on the rails.
I like it.
And I honestly was like, once I got the idea, I was like, this might be a cop out, but I'm smiling writing this. I like this. I'm going to keep playing with this. And I kind of, and the thing I've done for Philip a couple times has been a piece that I did about. The perspective of being a zombie, where you behave in the way that every Romero zombie behaves. However, inside your head, you are fully cognizant of what you're doing.
Right.
And how horrific that is. And I was like, I'd like to do another POV thing from, like, a monster's point of view, but we all Dracula stories are about what it's like to be Dracula. All Wolfman stories are what it's like to be a werewolf. You know, Frankenstein is all about what it's like to be Frankenstein.
Yeah.
The creature doesn't really have that yet. But it's got to be funny. Because I want to try to use it for Die Laughing, so...
Indeed, yeah.
Let's make it a tweet. So, yeah, you can check that out. That'll come out sometime in March. I'll remind you guys later when it does come out. And, of course, you can either attend or watch the stream of Die Laughing to see how much that has changed, to see how I perform it there. But I was pretty happy with it. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was super fun to do it. Which, one, it gave me an excuse to watch Creature from the Black Lagoon again.
Oh, how awful.
I know, right? Which is such a good movie.
No, this is research.
It's such a good movie. If you haven't watched it, watch it. And then also, you know, I just got to kind of putter around and then have Megan kind of look over my shoulder every now and again and be like, really? I love it that she often is just, like, not impressed by what I'm doing.
Oh, that's what... You should hang out with my wife I'm writing comedy. It's
super
brutal.
It's super.
It keeps you humble.
I know, because you keep kind of being like, I don't want to tell you not to look at what I'm doing, but it's really uncomfortable if you look at what I'm doing, because I can tell you don't give a shit.
No, it's...
And don't get me wrong, Megan's a way better writer than me, and she probably always will be. But, oof, that makes it hard.
My wife and I have such disparate tastes in comedy.
Yeah.
And really all media. We have such a hard time trying to find a movie to watch.
Have we talked about arguing about art on this show yet?
Possibly.
Maybe.
What? I don't know.
Either way, like, I will come up with, I think is genius, and she's like, nah, it's not funny. If you did this, it would be hilarious. And I'm going, that's stupid.
Yep. Megan and I don't think I'm pulling back the curtain too far here on this. But
please don't.
The only thing we have legitimately gotten mad at each other and argued about is art. And so to the point where we've done it two or three times, and now there's a moratorium on discussing art.
Oh, wow.
Because a movie will come on, and I'm like, oh, shit, this movie looked dumb, I never watched. I'm like, no, but it's great. Like, yeah, the plot's kind of silly, but... Like, it's got some great gags, and, like, they're doing a little more than it looks like on the surface. It's like, no, it's this and this and this. And now we get three sentences deep and go, we are not talking about this. Or she will say,
yeah,
we're done.
We're done.
And
yeah.
We just, we
you have to be done.
We walk
yeah.
away, because otherwise we go for an hour and a half, and it gets very personal.
Yeah.
And very weird. And I'm going, well, here's my experience. And she's going, yeah, but here's what I've written, and here's what I know about, like, theory. And it's like, oh, shit. And neither one of us can back down, because we're both perfectly right.
Yeah.
From our own fields of expertise. And we've just learned, like, we literally never fight until we have to debate comedy or art.
That was my first fight with Bill.
Brutal.
My
it's
first
fucking
fight
brutal.
With Bill was over sketch comedy.
Yeah. And I can totally see it.
Oh,
the
yeah.
thing is, it's like, what's weird is, like, Megan and I wrote a show together. And disagreed about, like, what jokes to put in where.
Mm-hmm.
But found the compromises and made it work. And I'd be like, and we'll come back to it. We got done, but now it's like, I think it's because when the stakes are low, you can escalate. Whereas if you have to turn the script in on Thursday, you got to go, okay, fuck it, we'll just do this one. I'll get this
well,
one.
Well, I mean,
one,
you've really hit upon why bands break up.
I think so.
Like,
yeah.
Literally.
And someone brought this up, too. It was a guest on a podcast that was a big fan of, like, Bon Jovi or something. And they're like, you know why these bands last longer compared to most? It's like a band like that. It's like everybody works for one guy. Like, Bon Jovi is John Bon Jovi, or whatever his name is.
Everybody else is
the
other people
in
the band. Yeah.
Yeah. So he gets final say.
Yep.
So either you do what he says or you're out of the band. The end. Whereas most bands form as a collective of
Metallica
friends,
or something like that.
And therefore, you start fighting, and eventually they break up because they can't all agree and they're done. And so it's actually, like, for the longevity of your band, it's much better to just hire a bunch of dudes, a la Dave Matthews Band, you know, and just... be successful for a long period of time by going, nope, and moving on.
Well, if you become expendable, then you are.
Yeah.
You know, whereas...
It's a weird thing, but yeah, it's really fucking bizarre, because we had to, like, sit down and have a conversation and be like, we literally have never been mad at each other about anything except art. And I guess if you have to argue over something, that's about as highbrow and pretentious as it gets.
But it's something you both care about, obviously.
Immensely, yeah. Like, and that's the thing. It's like, we're willing to go to the bone for artistic principle, which is insane.
That was the most hipster thing you have ever said.
No, but the thing is, that is actually true.
Yeah.
It's like other people fight over, like, how to raise the kids or, like, bills and shit. Mm-hmm. And we're like, are you shitting me? Slapstick has a long and varied tradition. And, like, you know, and, like, we're arguing vaudeville and, like, Laurel and Hardy versus the Stooges.
Laurel and Hardy every day. Just purely.
Let's not even get into it. I'm just saying. But, like, we're doing
I'm just
this
trying to start
of,
beef
you know,
now.
Like, but I know, but, like, Harold Lloyd versus, you know, Chaplin.
Oh, Harold like, Lloyd.
Me too.
I like them both.
But it's still,
I like them both.
But Buster Keaton has them both beat. So.
I don't know about that.
No, Lloyd fuck you. Might be my favorite.
But Buster Keaton.
But the point is, it's like, but we're doing these super granular arguments, and it's going, this all started from, I thought Tucker and Dale was funny. And that was like 45 minutes ago. And like, what the shit just happened? And we've literally had to say, the thing we have most in common, the thing that made us bond, and one of the things that we do the most together, which is to create art, we cannot talk about in the abstract with each other.
Right.
Because we hate each other if we do.
Yeah.
That's fucking weird, dude. Like, it's really fucking weird. And, like, we're kind of coming to terms with it, but it is really weird. We're like, you know, just a couple days ago, just like, nope, we're done. And having to, like, you know, kind of throw up the yellow flag on a play and go, now we both kind of circle each other for like 10 minutes, like sharks. Like, all right, I'm still a little, because you're still a little jacked up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the reason you realize you had to pull the flag is because you're getting jacked up.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Hey, do you want a glass of milk? What, you mean like I wanted a glass of that whatever,
you know,
earlier?
I mean, yeah. But it's a weird thing where it's just like you're like in fight or flight mode. Mm-hmm. And because we're fucking adults and live in a society, you go, boop, time out.
Yep.
Let's just take a break. And it's like, okay. And you kind of like pace around and don't really talk for a little bit. And it's just like, so you want 2 or 3 pancakes?
Yeah.
And you finish making fucking breakfast. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what the fucking shit happened? I can't, like, really? Because someone mentioned the Stooges? Like, what the fuck? It's a weird place to be. I'd be curious, dear listeners, comment on the Facebook or whatever, if you have a thing like this where, like, I got to imagine there's people who are like, oh, that's a cool painting. Are you shitting? Because, like, you know, your husband or wife is a museum curator or something.
Right.
Or, like, oh, no, I really love that, like, that card you got. My mom was super sweet. Like, you thought that was poetry? You know, like, oh, something God. Like... There's got to be things like that for, like, everybody. But...
Everybody has their thing.
I don't think I've ever had a thing that was so directly and easily identified as, fuck it, we can't talk about art. And then even when when we do,
awful,
it's like,
because that's what you talk about.
That's all we do. And so, like, we watch movies for, like, Horror Show Hot Dog, and then we get done, and we're like, what do you think? This and this, and you can, like, we both kind of, like, eye each other up and down, like, we good on this one? Can we talk about this more? And then, like, we kind of feel it out, like, okay, this is one that neither of us cares too much about, we can talk about it. Because we're not, and I think what it is we're not talking, if you're talking specifics, we're fine.
Mm-hmm.
We sat and, like, dissected, the 2016 Blair Witch with each other, and it was fucking interesting. But if we get into the grander idea of what cinema means,
oh, then
we'll start fighting. It's so fucking weird.
Well, now you're talking about general concepts.
This is the firstest of world problems. Oh. Like, if there's something between the sun and Mercury, it's us. Like, I don't know what that is, but it's us. So it's fucking weird. So I don't know if I brought that up before, but
yeah.
I don't know. One of these days when we have Megan on again, we'll have to try to, like, suss that out, but it's bizarre. Which makes you look forward to getting back to doing Horror Story Hot Dog. So,
cool.
Shall we take a break?
I think so.
Breaky McBreak.
Seems like a thing.
All right, sounds legit. We shall be back in just a second. If you guys like what you heard, come visit us on aonpodcast.com and leave a comment. Or you can send us an individual email at salsa, Matt, or Jenna at aonpodcast.com, or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
Nothing.
And we're back. I'm still Matt.
I'm Salsa.
I'm Jenna.
Cricket.
Dude, they're all looking at me. Hi, I'm Raiderly.
Yay!
Down to get more booze.
Yay! Booze.
I'm down for more booze too.
Yeah.
So before we begin our final segment here with
outro,
the outro,
we have literally already begun. So
God damn it. Okay, but I didn't get to talk about what happened to me. I did not get to talk about what happened to me over the weekend. Before Jesse and I broke up, we went to Costco. Because fucking
that's what
Costco.
Lame couples do, yeah.
Hey, shut your whore mouth.
Not
I
wrong.
Love Costco. I mean, obviously, story checks out. But anyway, we went to Costco, and they had kitchen appliances. Happens.
Okay.
And like I'm in love with the Ninja series, the Ninja kitchen appliances. I have a Ninja mixer blender thing.
Okay.
with several attachments for that.
I can't imagine why she'd be interested in ninja stuff.
I know, and the idea of Jenna having several attachments for something is just, yeah, okay.
Don't overthink it. Or do. It's up to you.
Sub-thinking, maybe.
Yeah, all right. So yeah, but what they had was the Ninja coffee maker.
Ooh.
And this thing, oh my God, you guys. So it's got like different brew states, so you can brew like to different strengths.
Oh, I can. Okay.
And you can brew kind of like a fake espresso.
Sure.
And it has a little frother wand.
Yes. That
say
phrase.
That like three times.
Yeah, right?
It has a little frother wand. Frother wand. Frother.
Yeah, see, you're like my sisters. This wand. Is just bone poison. This is not good.
Yeah, no.
Anyway. So yeah, it's like this super awesome coffee maker, and I brought it home and I unpacked it.
What?
Guess what I brewed in it?
How'd you christen it? How did you christen it?
True Stone, motherfuckers.
Oh shit!
Damn right.
You could have seen that coming.
Right. And not only was it an incredible experience because I pushed a couple buttons and it was just like, here, have a cup of coffee.
Nice.
Just a cup.
Oh, because
it has different cup settings too.
That's smart.
Nice. Yeah.
He's truly a ninja.
Yeah. But it was one of the better brewed True Stone brews that I've had, too.
Ooh, which one did you
have? It was a Sumatra.
Oh, the Sumatra. I love Sumatra and coffee. Yeah.
But because I brewed it in my previous coffee maker, which is 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got it about the same time.
About the same time you got your daughter.
Yeah. I think Jessa was a couple years old, and it was already old when I got it,
yeah.
So it's probably older than my teenage daughter, which, don't overthink that. Stuff might be growing
in
it.
You're old as shit.
I really am. but this was, I didn't think True Stone could get better until I brewed it in a fresh, new coffee maker, and I was like, oh, this is how this is supposed to be.
Well, this would explain,
fuck,
though.
Yeah.
The idea that when, for instance, if you're at Conversions or Die Laughing, and you get the True Stone made by the True Stone folks, they bring in the top-notch equipment.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And I will say, there must have been something magic in that old felt top hat they found. It is a slightly different experience. Don't get me wrong, it is good at home, but when Scott sits there and puts the time and effort, or when we have them on the podcast and they're doing all the shit with them, you're like, you got thermometers and all kinds of crazy shit. And they know how to make coffee right.
Oh, yeah.
So the more precise
maximize it. Yeah,
the more precise and exact
the grounds
your standards
are exactly
the better
right.
coffee will be. Because that coffee will up its game to as far as you are willing to let your game be upped.
Right.
So what we're saying is, yes. Order some True Stone and have it at home, but also go someplace where you can get it made for you.
Do better.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
Don't just have the shitty off-the-shelf Mr. Coffee and the little grinder that you push down on. You know what? Treat yourself.
Yeah.
Treat yourself.
Oh, my God.
And it's also mentioned, order some True Stone coffee. You can get that from TrueStoneCoffee.com by using the promo code...
Apropos.
Every week.
This was so much better last week.
Yeah.
You can use the promo code apropos to get yourself a discount on that True Stone coffee. Get it delivered to you with your name printed on the goddamn label, which makes you feel like a big fucking shot,
God,
I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So, get some of that delicious coffee sent straight to your door. Don't forget, they
feel like a big
press.
Shot, and then you want a big shot of espresso. Hey.
Yeah. Get that. Get those beans, get that cold press, get them at a discount with the promo code...
Apropos.
If you must. At TrueStoneCoffee.com. Now, it is about that time, because we're nearing the end of the show. Radley is now on...
What does that mean?
It means Radley's on her second drink.
Third
drink, which means she's about ready to join us.
Okay.
For a Fast Five.
Fast Five. That's right.
There you go. You know how this works.
Yes.
So this is, is another older one. This one comes from November...
It'll help.
November 30th. Of 2012.
Older than my daughter.
Yes.
Yep.
And was sent to us by the lovely and talented Mud.
Yay!
All right, let's just dive into it. Interesting. All right. So,
that's never good.
Question one, and again, for those of you who don't know, the way Fast Five works, A or B Coke or Pepsi type choices with no context. We pick the ones we think we prefer based on whatever silly logic we apply to it, and then we get the logic applied by the person who sent us the Fast Five after the fact. So, question one. Dr. Seuss or Shel Silverstein?
Dr. Seuss.
Silverstein? Silverstein.
Silverstein.
Steen? Is it Steen?
I believe it's Steen.
I'm going to go Shel.
Shel, all the way.
Where the Sidewalk Ends is my jam.
Yeah, also Boy Named Sue.
I am teaching a poetry unit right now, and I pull out all the Shel Silverstein because it fits everything, and it's awesome.
Yeah, but that Dr. Seuss is just so delightfully quirky.
I do love Dr. Seuss, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It is my first introduction to poetry was Dr. Seuss as like a tiny, tiny kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to read it
with
grandma.
We should have the caveat that there's no disrespect meant to the opposite choice in this one.
Yeah.
Probably,
yeah.
Because
oh, God.
Both are amazing.
Both are gods, as it were.
Also, I had a Dr. Seuss reading at my wedding. Like,
fair.
Pretty big fair. Fan of Dr. Seuss.
So you're going to lean Dr. Seuss on this one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Question two.
I'm calling it.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, for me, anyway.
Ooh.
Question two. Elmo... or Barney?
Oh, who's more annoying?
Who's more annoying is Barney. I can only watch... So, I have done this. I can only watch about 30 seconds of Barney before I change it. And I can generally get through half an episode of Elmo's World.
I hate them both so much.
But I think I gotta go Barney.
I have to go Elmo's World because Justin never got into Barney.
I have
so
refused.
I don't have the trauma of that.
My kids got into Elmo. They didn't get into Barney. But right. I knew Barney from staying home sick from school.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Both my kids, I have kept them away from Barney.
Smart.
They're not actually that into Elmo. So I'm cool with that.
So sidebar.
Okay.
We were home the other day and we had PBS on.
Story checks out.
You know, because kids like watching cartoons. And Ray Dilly and I were sitting and we were both not really paying attention. And suddenly we looked up and it was fucking bald kid.
Caillou.
It was Caillou.
Oh, fuck Caillou.
So which
and there like, was a sudden
scramble. Oh God.
Both
how
of us
we
were
it?
Like, code red, where's the remote?
Oh no. How did we let this happen for even a second?
I hate Caillou.
So which really the answer to that question, if it's actually Caillou. Barney or Elmo, which one's more annoying, it's Caillou.
I'm not saying I don't agree. However, there is a
we gotta go
with,
I gotta go
rule.
Barney.
You don't get to pick an
I
got, outside
no,
choice.
No, I gotta
go
Barney.
Pick one of the two.
I agree.
So I'm gonna go. I guess I'm gonna go Barney. Yeah, because Barney at least had nothing original. All of his songs are the melodies of existing songs with new lyrics. Whereas Elmo, at least when he's singing shit, as annoying as it might be, it's an original composition.
Well, and Elmo also has what's his name? The sound effects dude.
Michael Winslow.
No, from he does Pretty Young Companion, but or. I remember, but anyway, he's got the cool sound effects too, and they do like sound effects once in a while. Ooh. I've actually utilized in my theater classes for like how to make sound effects with your mouth. Yeah.
Question three: Beekman's World or Bill Nye the
Bill
Science
Nye.
Bill Nye.
Oh, I mean Bill Nye, but
Bill
I do love
Tom
Bill Beekman's World.
Okay, no, here this Tom is actually Keith? This came up with Megan and I
or Fred Newman.
Fred Newman.
A little while ago, because I only know Beekman from the last page of the Sunday Funnies in the Star Tribune.
Oh.
I guess there's a show.
Yeah, it's a really good show,
never
actually.
Never heard of it, never seen it.
The thing-
yeah, it's got a giant, like, puppet, not a puppet, but a dude dressed up as a rat. Okay. It's fun.
But
it is.
But that's how she knows Beekman,
mm-hmm.
which is weird, because we're only like a year or two apart.
Yeah.
So there's a weird, maybe that's like a cable, not cable thing. I don't know.
Maybe. But, I don't think so, but.
But that's the thing. It's like, so for me, like at the final page of the Sunday Funnies, you'd have Beekman's World, and it would have like, here's a question, and then they'd answer it scientifically, and here's a little experiment you could do at home.
Yeah.
And that's what I knew of it, and that's it. And it was fucking dope. And that was cool. I've also never seen a show with Bill Nye the Science Guy. I think he had a show, right?
Yeah,
for ever. Yeah.
Okay, but I only
and then
know
he will have one again.
He gives lectures,
mm-hmm.
And so like my experience for both of these things is very different from perhaps much of
Bill Nye's. Bill Nye's show.
Is my jam.
No, Bill Nye is great. Bill Nye's show.
Ties.
Bill Nye's show was extremely educational and entertaining.
Extreme.
The problem I always had with Beekman, and even as a kid, I had this problem. Is he was always trying too hard to be wacky.
Oh.
Yeah.
a little too cloying.
I think that's the problem most kids had. Like, it was fun, but it was, yeah, too hard. They were trying too hard to be a little kooky and crazy. It's like, it's kind of like Alton Brown, but not quite as tongue-in-cheek.
Alton Brown remains pretty charming.
Alton Brown is kind of tongue-in-cheek about it, whereas Beepin' World, it's for kids, so it's kind
when
of
he's doing
a...
doing stupid shit, he's like eh.
Well, we're doing stupid shit.
So over the he did a lot of, like, getting his face right up into the camera so his face was distorted.
Oh, that's old.
You know, yeah. And just shoving his face right in the camera.
The show is, like, 20 years old, though,
too. No, absolutely. But, like I said, even as a kid, that bugged me.
I want to go back and, like, find one on YouTube, because, like, I've literally never seen one, and that would be interesting. And
they're fun.
His pattern of speaking.
So I grew up on, like, Mr. Wizard.
Yeah, like, but.
And, which I've never
and
seen.
And Mr. Wizard was great.
Yeah, Mr. Wizard was.
Mr. Wizard was very, very good. Beakman was always, so over the top wacky, and the science was kind of like an afterthought in my mind. Whereas Bill Nye.
Young me might have loved that.
Bill Nye never talked down to you.
I would agree with that. Bill Nye always seems to speak to the height of the intelligence of his audience.
Exactly.
Whether a child or adult.
I never felt he talked down to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I agree with that.
So, question four then. Crayons, or crayons, if you're that type, or markers?
Oh.
I honestly think I gotta go crayons purely because of the secondary art applications.
Yeah.
Melting a crayon and doing weird drippy art is really fun.
Crayon candles are pretty cool.
I like doing the thing where you made like a bunch of different colors and then you'd color over with black and then
that's
it out.
Fucking rad.
Yeah, I gotta go crayons.
I'm going markers. Crayons never gave you a nice consistent coverage.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. The way I used markers, I never got that either.
but a marker,
by which means dildos.
But a crayon, you would see the texture.
Ew.
You would see the texture
I mean,
of the paper,
and
you always had white showing through. Even if you were coloring black, you'd have little specks of white showing through. Whereas a marker had full coverage.
I'm gonna have to still go crayons. Though it depends if the question is like, which one would you rather give your kids? Like crayons all the way, because Asher likes to take the caps off markers and like chew on them. Mm. Which
you
no boy no.
Crayon all day.
I mean, I don't want to eat a crayon, but at least but that's can. Not as like you're not sucking the you know those dye out of the crayon.
Right.
So
and lastly, Candyland or Chutes and Ladders?
Ha! Candyland.
Candyland, because it pisses off my husband.
I have never played Candyland.
This is why Salsa likes you.
I've played Snakes and Ladders, which same I think thing. Is the same thing.
Yeah.
But I've also probably only done that like twice. So these are games that I'm basically unfamiliar with and don't give a fuck about. And if I'm not mistaken, are both games for babies that don't really have a point.
You learn like
gameplay.
Colors and
you learn to not get pissed that you lose arbitrarily. Yeah. Kind of like Mario Kart, right?
Well, yeah, but my 3-year-old can play Candyland. My 3-year-old cannot play Mario Kart at this point.
Sure. Well, that's just like simply a motor skill thing.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, yeah you're learning colors,
like,
counting.
No. That's the thing. No, here's the thing about Candyland. There are no dice. As soon as you get done shuffling the deck at the beginning, the end of the game is predetermined.
Yeah.
I love this rant.
I have no idea what this means.
Okay, so the way Candyland works is... You have a stack of cards.
Oh, you mistook that for a question.
No, fuck you. You have a stack of cards that are colors, and
so
you turn them over the cards one at a time, and you move your character forward to that next color. There is no random chance after that. Once the cards are shuffled and done, the end of the game is already predetermined before the game even starts.
Okay, this is why you cheat. That's actually
where you roll
a
dice.
That's not a good mechanic.
No, you roll a dice in Chutes and Ladders, so at least there's an element of random chance. Whereas Candyland is literally, if you take the exact same deck, flip it over, and play the game again, it will end the exact same way.
You're just pissed because you can't see the colors.
Also, because it's colors.
I was totally going to say that. You beat me
you're
to
just
it.
Pissed because you can't play it because you can't see the damn colors.
Two things.
But I could play it if I could because it would end the same way every time.
Oh, my God.
Two things. Two important things here.
I want to know how you know it ends the same way every time if you can't
because it's
colors.
Predetermined. It doesn't matter if you can see colors or not. You're flipping over cards, and the cards, once they're in...
But if you flip over two cards that look to be the same color to you, but they're two different colors, it could totally end differently.
Yep.
All right, so two things. One... I love this.
Yeah. No.
Two, when we record our live podcast at Die Laughing this year.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
We are going to play Shoes
you
and
son
Ladders.
Of a...
No, Candyland, Candyland.
We're sorry, Candyland. Well, we're...
I totally got our daughter...
We'll just flip cards and we'll see. And if we manage to make it through a game, we're going to flip that deck over.
Oh my god. Yep.
Start right at the same place and see the same outcome. So, for science.
Yes. I totally got our daughter Candyland.
Candyland in an hour and a half.
Oh yeah. No, it's like a 10 minute game.
Oh, this is going to be super fun.
I got our daughter Candyland just to piss salsa off.
We bring a new guest every time we finish a game. I think
yes!
That would be super fun.
Yes, please. Please do this.
Oh my god.
Can Lilibeth be one of your guests?
If she's up at 4 in the morning, whatever the fuck we're on.
I mean, she probably will be, but.
If not, you can be her proxy.
Yeah.
Which means you are also assuming all her debts and other...
No, she'll win the fucking thing. That's what she does.
All right.
Oh, that's why Salsa's pissed.
I look forward to this. Salsa's, like, rocking on his heels right now. This is so good.
He's like, I hit you all.
I fucking hate that game.
Question one.
Yes.
Shel Silverstein... Steinstein?
Shel Silverstein.
Shel Silverstein. And Dr. Seuss. Favorite childhood poet / writer?
Yeah.
Go I think Shell. I got to stick with Shell. Yeah.
And I got to stick with mine for the same answer, although sense. Different reasons.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, that's a solid one.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I got to go click back here to make sure I get the context here right. Yep, no, I'm right. Okay. Elmo or Barney, which one would you get more pleasure from lighting on fire?
Yeah, Barney.
Barney. Yeah, I think.
You know, I think I might have to switch to Barney.
I think
because,
I chose wisely.
Because fire on Elmo would just look like a more fuzzy Elmo.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah.
And wouldn't last nearly as long.
Yeah.
Also,
no.
I've seen that.
I believe you.
Oh, no, that's a Kermit. Never mind.
Yep.
Yeah. Also.
Oh, that's
right. Wow.
Oh, I forgot.
Also, you're burning a dinosaur, so it's just fossil fuels.
Yep. Oh, God.
Woof. Uh-huh. Let me think. Bill Nye versus
Beekman.
Favorite childhood science show?
Yep, Bill Nye.
Okay, so I've seen neither. So I guess in my experience of being exposed to both, the one I enjoyed as a child was Beekman. But I didn't realize there was a dude that was Beekman. I don't know if that is the guy that did the thing or if that's an actor they hired. I think
Beekman's world as the comic thing was first, probably.
It was. I know Megan and I looked up that much, at least. That predates it by a ways.
Yeah.
I'll stick with the... That is not even remotely the guy. Okay.
But that's what but he that's, looked
that
like.
Looks, and, that looks awful.
It was terrible.
Looks like some 90s shit. So I'm gonna stick with Bill Nye.
Yeah. No.
You really just can't go wrong with Bill Nye.
He was generally more quality, anyways.
Crayons or markers? Preferred childhood art medium.
Markers.
I think I'm gonna stick with crayons.
I have
the same complaint because crayons disappointed me, and if I was trying to like do a specific thing and I couldn't get them dark enough, that upset me because I was just enough twitchy. But
I don't remember having a lot of markers actually as a kid. But
the average parent does not give children a lot of markers because they get better. Yeah. They make washables now, I guess.
They do. Like all of our markers are washables and it's not nearly so bad.
Yeah.
And Lilibeth has
didn't exist when we were kids.
And, so. Yeah. Well, I mean they were non toxic.
Allegedly. So and then lastly, Shoes and Ladders or Candyland, the Better Kids game. I think we know where Salsa lands.
Which is why we'll always choose Candyland.
I guess I'll go Shoes and Ladders. I don't think either one is terribly entertaining. But Shoes and Ladders
well,
sounds
no, of course not. You're older than five.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there are kids' games that are
still
kind of fun. Like,
I think that's debatable.
I can still play a game of, like, Sorry or Trouble and have an okay time. Mousetrap's still pretty fun.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even you don't ever play Mousetrap. You just
I don't know. I don't know.
Operation's fun.
I don't know anyone who has ever played Mousetrap.
Oh, I played
okay,
it.
Okay, well,
really?
You know me.
All I know is we would set it up. I don't know.
Oh, yeah,
I really don't
played.
Know you.
Yeah.
That's true.
I don't know you.
Yeah. Well, you've known me in rather biblical terms, in fact.
Okay, so I know one person
really?
Who has actually
I wasn't there
played
for that one.
The game.
Song lyric.
Oh, anyway. Sorry. I'm not smart, apparently, or hip.
It's obscure.
Or cool. Or hipster enough.
No, you're describing salsa very well. So I think as a room, we're probably all saying Shoes and Ladders is the better game, although we all are desperately excited to play Candyland with Salsa Die Laughing.
Yeah.
So, oh, God, this is so good. We've got to find a way for listeners to donate money to make it worse for Salsa something.
Yes!
Maybe like a $5 donation sends them back to the start?
No, he has to go back two purple squares.
I don't know what that means.
Exactly. Okay. And he doesn't either.
Yes.
Oh,
I love you, sweetie. Really,
so,
I do.
You know what? I'm okay with it because it would lend some element of randomness to the game.
Would it? I don't think it's random that everybody hates you.
Wow. No, story checks out.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I love my life sometimes. All right. That said, thank you everyone for listening. It's been a lovely week. We have missed you. It's good to be back. We hope you are all having a fabulous Valentine's Day. It is Valentine's Day as we record this.
Yeah.
So hopefully you are having or have had a Valentine's Day that was exactly what you wanted from it, whatever that might have been.
I drank.
Pizza. Yeah. Booze.
I drank booze.
No, we had tacos. Sorry.
I'm going to go home and eat tacos. Yeah. So
Taco Tuesday.
Good. Yeah.
So yes. Actually, I can billboard this. I will not be here next week. Y'alls are on your own. Because it is Tuesday night as we record this. Thursday morning, I am on a plane going to Disney World.
Woo!
So I'll be gone for a week. So Salsa and Jenna are in charge of the asylum. They can do with the show what they will.
Oh, speaking of asylum and crazy people, what are you guys be doing in a couple weeks that you are stupid and like
the
freezing?
Polar plunge?
Yeah,
would that be the thing you're referring to?
Uh huh.
Sweet seg.
My wife is all about hating me today.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yes, but I will be gone next week. Jenna and Salsa will be running the asylum, and that will be whatever it might be. Speaking of crazy things, as Radley was wise enough to point out,
sorry,
we're a couple weeks away from the Polar Plunge, which
we're only a week and a half away.
Jesus, both Salsa and myself are signed up for, along with some other Fearless members. If you go to the Polar Plunge website, search for Fearless, you can find all the various people signed up. And
two and a half weeks.
Okay, you can donate money to any one of us. We, as we've mentioned, I think before, the more important thing than making sure any one person makes a fuck ton of money is making sure everybody gets at least $75 that allows them to jump. And once again, all the proceeds benefit the Special Olympics because this, you know, it's nice sometimes to ask for people to donate money to a thing that isn't just for us. And we like doing things that are also benefiting the community at large. Mm-hmm. So. We would like to do something very stupid to benefit a very cool cause, and then you guys can benefit from our horrible stories and or really awkward pictures and afterwards.
Tax deductions.
Also, it's tax deductible. Yeah. Fucking hell.
Salsa, make sure you know which locker room to go in this time.
Fucking I'm so happy right now. To be fair, with the shrivel, he could probably go in either.
Well, yes.
He's out.
Salsa has fucked right off. All right. On that note, thanks everybody for listening. Thank you, Radley, for joining us for our Fast Five again.
Thank you, love, for having me, as always.
Salsa's coming back because we all know he can't do better. So don't forget to check out Salsa coming up on WCCO morning show on what date?
The 21st.
21st.
Yeah.
Do a quick Google for the Polar Plunge Minneapolis and support anyone on the Fearless team. That is appreciated. Jenna.
Harbingers.
Yeah, two more weekends.
Two more weekends. Go to moundstheater.org, I believe, and go get your tickets.
Yeah. Find the event on Facebook if you need help, and that'll get you there. By the way, tomorrow, because of course the last thing I'm doing before leaving town in the morning, way at like nutsack o'clock in the morning, is doing a show at Huge. I'll be performing in Love Letters, a show put together by former guest of the show, Shay Roberts, where we read love letters or poetry from when we were teenagers, and then improvise scenes based on that.
Oh, God, it's going to be awesome.
My kids may or may not be in attendance because they'll be in my house because we have to get up so early.
Yes.
So my kids might have to watch me read junior high poetry.
Yes. Please film this.
Speaking of kids, I do have one more plug.
Please.
Not this coming Friday, but the Friday after is the Vilification Tennis Amateur Show.
Fuck yeah, it is.
Woo! And none of Jess's friends can come see it because they're all too young, so
that's
you should.
Legit.
Megan
just got tickets for me and her.
Yep.
So, yeah, we will be there with bells on. This is gonna be a tough one because we know most of the people in this one.
And they're all good.
They're all really funny. Yeah. So
I'm glad I'm not judging it.
I am so glad I'm not in that cast.
I was told I'm not allowed to judge. I'm really unhappy about that.
No, I got actually, to pull back the curtain. Tim emailed me like yesterday and was like, So I normally wouldn't ask someone that's not in the cast if we can have a meeting after the show at their house, but
that is hilarious.
And I was like, yeah, that's cool. I'll just go hang out in my room and masturbate. He's like, cool, sweet, thanks.
So different than normal, how?
Exactly.
Right.
So it'll be different because he won't be in the living room masturbating.
Yeah, that may or may not. I believe the plan is still just to have a little post-mortem at the venue, but if they have people that need to get home and do whatever, like if you guys have to go somewhere else, I was like, yeah, you can go to my place. That's fine.
Yeah.
So, and I will literally sit in another room because that's not my business anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that made me laugh super hard. And the fact that Tim just did not even acknowledge my masturbation joke made me super happy.
It's all that.
It's probably for the best.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. Hopefully your Valentine's
I'm just going to be
Day...
wandering through every so often, buck naked. Just like, don't mind me.
I live here.
Just getting a glass of water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully your Valentine's Day made you super happy and super hard or whatever the equivalent is. thanks for listening to us, and we will talk to you next week. Say it.
Bye.
There you go. Eat the fucking cake, everybody.
Hey, everybody. You should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter at AON Podcast. Or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for apropos of nothing.
Levels. This is me talking into a microphone.
This is me talking into a different microphone.
I get a microphone, too.
That'll do. No, you don't.
Aww. None for you.